This is Gina Zimbardi with another episode of the Go Nuts podcast. I'm here with Erin Lazat with Michigan State University, and I'm really excited to talk to her today about her interests in pest management, as well as a number of other topics. So Erin, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Okay, thanks, Gina. Thanks for inviting me on the podcast here today. As Gina said, I work with Michigan State University Extension. I'm an integrated pest management educator. I'm located in Northwest Michigan, closest to the city of Cadillac that some might be familiar with. And I work primarily at this point in my career with emerging specialty crops. So particularly crops that maybe haven't had a 100-year history of research at our land-grant university, Michigan State. And actually in the surrounding states, a lot of times we don't have a lot of those university resources that have built up over time. So it's an exciting job, but it's challenging in unique ways because oftentimes we're addressing issues that haven't been formally researched in the past, working with small scale industries, and really just trying to help them achieve kind of the tipping point for commercialization and for generating some revenue on the farm.
Fantastic. I know there are a lot of emerging specialty crops. I recall at our last meeting in Iowa, currants was a really big topic. So I'd be happy to discuss kind of your interest there. So how did kind of you get started in this career?
Yeah, so I started out working at a university research station. And at that time, my focus was on tart cherry production, on apple production, and wine grape production. And so I started out with what I think maybe your kind of three poster child for specialty crops in Michigan. So those are really well established for the most part. They have kind of that long history of partnership with the university. And we have quite a few faculty members that focus their time on dealing with the pests and the horticultural needs of those industries. And as I got further on in my career, I wanted to move back to my home area. And I realized I'd gained kind of a diverse set of skills around pest management. And so as we had new crops coming on board and growers making some significant investments in those cropping areas, the university really saw it as a chance to help our agricultural community diversify, you know, hopefully take advantage of some niche markets or novel markets, and to diversify on the farm, which we now know is, of course, very important for risk management. So I think over time, we had been kind of going towards these larger monoculture farms that were highly specialized in one crop. But we get to that, you know, issue of putting all of our eggs in one basket when we do that. And so as opportunities for hop production or chestnut production or lavender, Saskatoons have done a little bit of kind of everything, helping to get these crops off the ground to provide some support for growers, particularly when it comes to the integrated pest management side of things. So that's kind of how I got where I am today.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Yes, polyculture has been such a hot topic, and a number of our growers, especially a lot of our younger members, have really taken it to heart where they talk about growing specific nuts and ground cover. They talk about, you know, what sort of crops can they grow in between the trees or in row crops as well as the ground cover. So that's definitely an area that works well within our organization. So pest management is a pretty wide topic. And when you're talking about kind of all these specialty crops, can you talk a little bit about some topics within pest management and where you focus?
Yeah. So first off, one of the benefits of working on these specialty crops is that we have what I call some repeat offenders. So we have things like potato leafhopper, Japanese beetle, rose chafer, spider mites, some things that we tend to see in perennial cropping systems across the board. And so if you can really focus on what we would call kind of these general pests or broad range pests, broad host range pests, then you can start to get at kind of some of the bread and butter of pest management. And luckily, it doesn't change all that much. So we kind of know you know, what practices work against those pests, what pesticide modes of action against those pests. And so it gives us a good starting base to start talking about pest management. And then we have to move in to what I would think is kind of the second tier of pest management, which is thinking about what are those crop-specific pests. So in a lot of nut crops, we have things like weevils that can affect. Probably the big one with chestnuts would be something like Cryphonectria parasitica or chestnut blight. So then the kind of second tier is, you know, how do we endear these industries and get researchers on campus excited and supported to address some of those crop-specific issues on these small acreage crops. So one of the things I often joke about is really I'm a professional agitator. I just, you know, try to bend the ear of people on campus to try to spearhead some grant efforts to make it easier for researchers to do that research. I'll do field work for them if they need it. So kind of filling in the gaps that traditionally we, you know, would fill in with really large national grants to address, you know, issues like that. So that's kind of the second tier. And then we have some basic work that is ongoing, and that's things like addressing resistance development and pesticides, in making sure that we're getting new registrations or expanded labels that encompass these specialty crops. So when you think about, you know, a manufacturer of some of these pesticides, they're looking at it from a monetary perspective, and it's obviously much more, it's a bigger benefit to them to label it for something like corn or soybean, something that's a large acreage crop. And they do, I think, a really nice job as well of including even things like apples and cherries, which compared to field crops is relatively small acreage. But when we get down to these small new crops, we really have to work to provide the data to get label expansions granted. And so I also work quite a bit with the IRFAM, which is a federally funded program that helps offset some of the work that's required by the EPA to get label expansions or new products labeled. So there's kind of some really nice tools that have been developed to support these, what we would think of as a minor crop, but it takes just, you know, somebody kind of staying on top of it and agitating. And so that's often a role I play, especially when it comes to pest management.
I can definitely relate to professional agitation, professional agitator. I feel that that is a skill that is required in my job as well. So I it's something near and dear to my heart, because you're right. You have to stay on top of it, and there's got to be someone who's rattling cages to get things done. But I appreciate the fact that you've kind of broken this down into these three tiers, and I can definitely see where the second tier really interacts with our organization. And this is exactly what I want to do with this podcast, because the Northern Nut Growers Association, our mission is to help researchers with, you know, getting money and getting resources out there to help these researchers with these specialty crop questions. For example, last year we gave a substantial grant to some researchers out of Ohio State University to focus on research on blossom end rot and chestnuts. So you mentioned blight, you mentioned chestnut weevils. These are the exact sort of topics where we encourage researchers. And from someone from academia, when I say researchers, I mean very broad spectrum as well. I mean from the extension offices, I mean graduate students, undergraduate students, as well as faculty. So my goal is to create kind of connections with people like you, a professional agitator, and be like, hey, we're here to help. So that's fantastic. And, you know, Michigan, I know Michigan State has a lot of interest in these specialty crops. So it's just fantastic to hear. So you talked about, so your first tier would be kind of the perennial agitators, or the things that you kind of see crop up again and again. Your second tier would be kind of the communication between researchers, and your third tier would be kind of the federal tier, or more, and as far as pesticides and EPA work. Is that correct?
Yeah, kind of that regulatory component, which, you know, even though I focus on IPM, you know, with these specialty crops, we don't have an extension person that kind of focuses on all the other things. So oftentimes I end up working, we just wrapped up an effort to look at the produce safety rule impact on chestnuts and working with FDA on that. You know, there's some horticulture stuff that goes on. So we have an experimental planting of new cultivars at the Northwest Station. So it does, you know, broaden out from there just from necessity. But I would say, yeah, the kind of pillars, I guess, of the program is definitely IPM based.
Yes, I can definitely understand. And it's funny how it's like, well, no one else will do it, so I guess it's my job now. But no, I know.
I was recruited to this by Dr. Dennis Fulbright, and you probably had the opportunity to meet and get to know Dennis over time. And Dennis was, you know, perhaps one of the most passionate crop advocates that we've ever had at MSU, certainly that I've ever worked with. And so I always kind of blame him for how I ended up here, because I think just his love of the industry, his belief in it was just really infectious. And so I thank him for that, and I blame him for that as well.
Yes, Dennis was and continues to be a huge part of our organization, where we feel his loss spectacularly. He held a number of offices within our organization. He helped edit books and put books out there. I mean, he was just such a whirlwind, and we're still trying to really fill his very large footsteps. So I'm glad to hear that you blame him and thank him, because that seems to be a pretty common kind of reaction to Dennis. So yes, we definitely feel his loss. So within these three pillars, kind of where does your passion lie? Is it specifically in one of these? Do you want to focus more on one over the other? What's kind of your bread and butter here?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the regulatory piece is a necessary evil. It's not necessarily the most rewarding or engaging work. I mean, definitely for me, the most rewarding and engaging work is the work I do with growers directly. So I don't think there's much more satisfying than when someone has a problem, they have a concern. Sometimes they don't know what's causing the problem. So you can, do diagnostic stuff. And we do a lot of that virtually now. I mean, especially this year, but even before, I provide statewide and oftentimes multi-state coverage. And so text messages and emails and, web submissions through Ask an Expert and things like that, I spend a lot of time helping people diagnose issues. And some of them are really easy, and some of them are mysteries, and they take a lot to diagnose and figure out. I do that in close partnership with our diagnostics lab at MSU, which is awesome. When we have something that isn't necessarily something we can visually diagnose easily, whether it's a virus or a nematode, those things often can be hard to get your arms around and understand what's going on, especially when you combine them with environmental factors. So they've been awesome in helping with that. And then I think putting together a pest management plan with growers and seeing them kind of regain control of an issue that was threatening, their yield is just super satisfying. So, I mean, that's definitely my favorite part. I'm a people person. And so just getting to work with growers and feel like, you're actually making a difference on an individual farm is super important to me. And especially this year, with everybody being kind of more isolated with social distancing and everything, they've been a real lifeline. These growers that I've connected with over the last 8 years or so that I've been working in chestnuts, I get text message updates from the field and pictures sent in, and I really got to feel like I had a sense of what was going on, even though I was somewhat isolated in the state. So it is definitely a two-way working relationship. They, of course, have to understand all aspects of the farm, and I just can focus on this kind of smaller slice of the farm for them. And so I think that is a really nice way to ensure that they're hopefully getting, really good information, that they're feeling confident about what they're doing, and that we're being impactful and helpful on the farm.
Exactly. That sounds like it's a sentiment I've heard a number of times this year has been kind of the surprising connection between growers and people who are helping them. And it's a really rewarding one. And one of the things that I always say, what I love about my job and working with growers is that there's never any hesitancy to talk about what they're really passionate about. So if you're ever having a really bad day, just call up a chestnut grower because they will talk to you all day about chestnuts and are just so happy to do so.